Bucks, who are down 2-0, they're heading back to Milwaukee. That game will happen tomorrow night, and only one in the NBA playoffs tonight, Phoenix at home against Denver. And here is Mark Kestacher of ESPN. How you doing, Mark?
Guys, how are we doing this afternoon?
We're doing very well. What do you make of this LeBron number change, Space Jam 2 promotion? What's going on here in L.A.?
Talk to us. Oh, man.
You know, the first thing I made of it was, well, I have a few months before I have to switch up my charts for any broadcasting
right.
Opportunities I have. Someone filled me in that I guess he's wearing that number in the Space Jam 2 that's either coming out soon or has come out or is about to come out. So there's probably some marketing there as well. You know, he wore it in the good years in Miami. He wore it for the U.S. basketball team, so I know it has a lot of meaning to him on that side as well. But, yeah, it kind of caught me by surprise. I was golfing with PJ Carlissimo today, and when we got off the course, that was, like, the first thing I saw. And I'm like, I gotta read a little bit more into this.
So where are the Lakers on this? Are they just saying, you do whatever you want because we get to sell a bunch of new LeBron jerseys now? Or where do they stand?
You know, I probably should have thought of it from that side, too. Yeah, I think there's some, I don't know what the deadline is these days when you want to make changes, you know, whether it's to a logo or a color scheme or a number. I know, you know, sometimes I think you could just, you know, switch a number. But you're right, this will be all new gear times, what is it, like teams have like 4 or 5 different uniforms now. So if you got the whole LeBron Lakers collection, you got a few more jerseys to come up with between now and next October.
Mark, we were talking about the Bucks the other day. Where does Giannis's status in the league, like, how big of a hit does he take if these guys get dummied by the Nets? I mean, he's always been regarded as MVP, best player, whatever, but it just, is he the guy that can't get it done? Like, where does his status lie if they get roasted here by the Nets?
Yeah, this is going to be a big hit if they don't turn it around here in the next couple of days. Not only because, I mean, they look bad in how they're playing and they're not shooting the ball well, but, you know, just not moving the ball. Giannis went into a crowd. I don't remember what time of the game it was on Monday, but a game that we had, and it looked just like 2 years ago when things started going south against the Raptors, and it looked like last year before he got hurt in that second round matchup in the bubble. There was a lack of trust, you know, of giving up the ball and moving it like they had been the whole second half of the season. I know Brooklyn is better than Miami, but still, they look great against the Heat. And he doesn't have to be the guy. You know, again, when Chris Middleton starts 0 for 8, and I don't want to just lay it all on Chris, but, you know, when they're just not hitting their shots, and they're a great three-point shooting team, that he probably felt, you know, as it got down to, they're down 20, they're down 30, I got to do something. And that never works well for him. So in totality, you know, if they don't come back here and they look poorly in this series against Brooklyn, first of all, Mike Budenholzer is going to be in trouble as head coach. And second of all, yeah, Giannis takes another hit as a great player who can't do it in the postseason.
Yeah, I think that's natural. I think that's the way it should be applied. And we're chatting with Mark Kestacher of ESPN. I do think you also clearly have to give a lot of love to Brooklyn, who are shooting 50, 40, 90 as a team. Like, that
crazy.
Is outrageous statistics. And I guess a lot of that has to be on you know, Budenholzer and the Bucks as well. You're letting them get those shots off and clearly making them feel comfortable. But at the same time, they're doing this without Harden. And, you know, Durant's getting his cookies, and he's doing his thing, and Kyrie, but they're getting
my guy
depth scoring from top to bottom. I mean, I'm not sure who's going to stop Brooklyn in the East. I don't see where this gets stopped.
We've been wondering all year if they ever get these three guys together, who's going to stop them, and can they play enough defense where it won't matter? You know, if they're going to score 120, 125, you know, just a little bit of defense is going to make them impossible to beat. And then you realize that for most of the year, they've only had two of the three, and they were better than the Bucks. You know, they were the 2 seed and probably could have taken out Philadelphia if not, you know, for late in the season when Philly made a nice push. But they're going to have to try something different on Durant tomorrow. It's hard because, you know, you double him and now Kyrie gets free and you try to double both of those and Joe Harris, who was only the best three-point shooter in the NBA this year, gets wide open shots. Blake Griffin's playing like the Lob City Clippers from six, 7 years ago. I don't know how much he keeps that up, but he looks about as good as he has looked right now. And a guy no one's ever heard of, you know, Bruce Brown, who played at Miami and in college and then played in Detroit, you know, way under the radar for a couple of years. You know, he's jack of all trades, can do anything. I think they're better than people realize. They're certainly playing better defense than they've played, but it just takes one good Milwaukee offensive game, and for them, if they can start hitting some shots and feeling good and taking pressure off the offense, that's a really good defensive team. Whether it's Giannis, whether it's Drew Holiday, Middleton can defend, P.J. Tucker is a pain in the butt, you know, when he's not in foul trouble like he was the other night. So it comes down to one game. I know they can't be eliminated tomorrow, but they got to get that game, and they got to play it well and kind of turn this series on its ear. But Brooklyn is a very good team, even though they're shorthanded.
Chatting with Mark Hestetter of ESPN. So Jokic ends up winning the MVP, which felt like somewhat of a foregone conclusion coming down the stretch. I know there were other guys who were in contention, but when Murray went out and Jokic never missed a beat and the Nuggets never missed a beat, I think that solidified it for him. And he's been a great player for a couple of years. He's been on the radar for a couple of years here as a stud. But trying to get a read on his future is difficult when you compare it to other MVPs who got so much pub for so long. I mean, LeBron clearly, Steph clearly, KD, even Russ, Harden. Like Jokic, as much as he's been hyped over the past couple of years, it's not in your face like any other previous MVP that I can think of. So where is his future going to take him in terms of popularity, in terms of being a household name if it gets to that point, and the chances of him winning multiple MVPs? Where do you stand on that with Jokic?
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. Just to take it back to the MVP itself, I think you're right. He clinched it when Jamal got hurt. And, you know, Michael Porter certainly stepped up, but, you know, he led the team and he played in, if not every game, just about every game. And that seemed to be, you know, the marker this year was Joel Embiid didn't play enough games and Steph Curry made a nice run, you know, on the back end, you know, to get into third place for MVP. But it was Jokic. And, you know, he requires a good team because he's such a good passer for his size. He's difficult to guard because he attracts attention with his own skill. And then, you know, he's so good at taking advantage and leveraging that defense and finding the weak spot. And if you're a good guy running with him, a good player, that's only going to help, you know, what he does in, you know, 5 to 10 assists per night. I think he landed it right about 8 during the season. So this might be his max value, what we're seeing now. You know, he's hit his peak, and hopefully he can hold on to that peak for a while. So I don't know, you know, if there's anything greater in the future except for how they continue to construct this roster and try to stay healthy. I really didn't think that they were going to be able to hold on to a top three seed once Murray went down, but they did. All credit to him, you know, and young guys who have stepped up as well. So I guess that's a long way to answer your question. They're going to have amazing success, you know, coming out of the Denver market for him to have anything greater. He's already on that radar now as an MVP. Can he do it back-to-back? I think a lot of things had to work in his favor to do it. I think he's a deserving MVP, but there's so many outstanding, talented players in an odd season where for so many it was hard to stay healthy with all the games, with all the crunch schedule, and he was the one who did and performed from December right until it all ended in the regular season in May.
You just mentioned odd season. What are your thoughts on seeing fresh new faces this time of year? I think for years it seemed like a collision course where Steph was going to meet LeBron somewhere along the line. We almost knew it before the season. I personally loved that. It just seemed like it was part of the playoffs to see those guys ultimately meet in the finals. But a new face like a Booker out in Arizona, what do you make of just some different faces stealing the spotlight right now?
I love it. I remember, you know, when the torch was going from Kobe to LeBron and that whole 2003 draft class, you know, with D-Wade and Carmelo Anthony, and there was such an infusion that we're seeing that now. I think, look, the ratings down here, you know, might take a hit. You know, if you end up with Utah in the finals or Phoenix in the finals. but you know what? If it could be great basketball. That scene last night in Salt Lake City, you know, which, of course, you know, the pandemic kind of halted everything for big crowds, but it was so great where you could barely hear the announcers. We haven't had that in so long. And the same thing in Phoenix and Denver Booker and DeAndre Ayton, you know, and Trae Young in Atlanta, you know, what they've been able to do. So I think it's terrific. And even if, you know, it could be a ratings hit to not have any of the big market teams or the, you know, established players in those markets being on the center stage when it's all said and done, I think this year being so wide open and hopefully, you know, competitive, you know, who knows if James Harden does come back and the Nets are playing defense like we've seen in this first two games against Milwaukee, any matchup may not be competitive against Brooklyn. But if we get anything that resembles competition with young faces, regardless of market size, and we get to a 2-2 series, that's going to build naturally, and we could end up, you know, having something terrific. But I love it. I think it's great when we see these new players emerging.
Well, we love having you on. We love PJ Carlissimo as well. Is he back on the restaurant tour, going out for dinner every night? Or what's
yeah,
up?
You know, it's hard. Bristol, Connecticut doesn't allow for, you know, a ton of variety, but he's got his favorites, and he hits them up, and I'm just giving him the golf course tour right now because we had a couple days in between games, and this is a good time to be in Connecticut because, you know, we're 90 degrees, we're not too far from the shore, so this is our, like, 5 weeks.
Dude, you know, Connecticut, Connecticut is hot as hell. People think, like, Miami is hot. Connecticut is the hottest summer I ever spent in my life, man.
I'm telling you, man, you get to that interior Hartford, and it is. I'm in between Hartford and, like, Old Saybrook, which is right on the Connecticut shore. And yeah. I'm telling you, and you know this, you drive within, like, a mile of the water, and the temperature gauge on your car drops 10 degrees. It's amazing. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, the SWAS meter comes out, and you're in trouble.
Through the roof in Hartford, man. I love it. Well, do what you got to do down there, Mark, and we really appreciate you taking time, as always. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
No problem. Always good to be on with you guys. Have a good one.
You got it. Mark Kastacher of ESPN.